If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
A Thursday edition of Birds 365 takes us to the draft. 1 week from today, we will have the Eagles' answer. Many a years, Howie Roseman moves, he trades, he doesn't like to stick where he is. Ann Cummings is here from Pro Football Network. Talk a little draft with us, and we go through this, you know, the first mock drafts, you know, the way too early edition comes out on Friday, generally for next year. But Thursday is the day, and at 22, it's hard to gauge. But how much of all the visits and everything is happening is giving us any intel on what Howie Roseman could be thinking?
It's something to take into account whenever you do see a player visit, for sure. But at the same time, there are teams who take players that they don't do visits with. You know, you have a lot of opportunities to affiliate yourselves with these players. The All-Star Circuit, the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, even the Hula Bowl and things like that. You've got the NFL Combine as well, where you can meet informally or formally. And then there's other avenues to, you know, information gather, right? Coaches, teammates, behind the scenes, things like that. So, you know, a visit, I think, is more so for a cross-checking method, right? You know, especially if they have medical histories to take into account, right? You know, you want your independent team doctors to do that evaluation, but it's more so an ancillary method. It's not something that, you know, you can point to and say, oh, they're picking this guy because he had him for a visit, right? You know, it's a little more, it's more so just cross-checking and eliminating options and trying to narrow down the list so that it's a little easier to make your decision when the time comes.
So how much stock do you put into something like, you know, James Palmer tweet yesterday saying the Eagles have met with essentially all the top corners? Do we look at that and say, well, they got to be looking cornerback? Or is that just, in your mind, more due diligence for a position that they really need?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both, right? Because, yeah, it shows that they're looking at a defensive back probably. But, you know, it's, again, it's narrowing down the list within that window of players, right? You know, you have a lot of potential options. And, you know, from the media side, right, a media scout, my job is to tell you all the potential options that they could choose. So I got to look at every single guy. But the Eagles might be looking at certain guys within their scheme parameters, within their relative athletic score parameters, right, size. So, you know, some guys will be ruled out because of that. And then character, medicals. It's all about a process of narrowing down the list, making it thinner, making it a little easier to pinpoint who you want on your team, right? So, and then based on the valuation of the board too, how the board plays out. So it's more so narrowing down the list and just kind of keeping your options open. But it does also show a degree of interest, right? If they focus on one position like corner a little more than others, yeah, you can pretty much assume that they're going to try and get a corner, at least with one of those first three picks in the top 55 or so. But, you know, it's a little bit of both because it doesn't sell it completely.
Yeah. And your point about scheme and trying to find that right fit for what you're going to do speaks volumes, Ian. So, you know, with Vic Fangio coming in, the Eagles have been playing the system now, the Vic Fangio sort of system for 3 years. They have they've had the cover band. Now they have the original. And, you know, Vic plays a lot of zone coverage, a lot of quarters, a lot of cover six, cover eight, spins off. Communication's a big thing when it comes to the back end. A lot of blown coverages, especially with younger players, when things go poorly in that particular system. So if I gave you those parameters of those top cornerbacks that might be available at 22, who sticks out to Ian Cummings?
At 22, Kool-Aid McKinstry is probably the top one for me. I think if you can get a guy like Quinyon Mitchell or Terrion Arnold, if they're there, then you run to the podium. But I expect both of them to be in heavy consideration for top 20 picks. So I think you might have to move up if you want to get them. But Kool-Aid McKinstry is still my CB3. I think he's severely underrated. I think because of Terrion Arnold's rise, he's got flown under the radar at times. But you watch his tape at Alabama, very good in man coverage. But I think the important part for the Eagles, right, because you talk about zone, cover four, yeah, cover eight, right? You know, he's very good at managing route relationships in zone, passing off routes to his teammates. You know, he's very good, very instinctive and smart with those exchanges. And then he knows how to manage space to transition and minimize separation for receivers out of those transitions. So a lot of the trademark discipline issues that you see with a young player, you don't really see with Kool-Aid. He's very smart, intelligent, very measured, quick to react, and very good processor on the back end. But then he can play man and press up guys if you need him to as well. And he's very savvy in run support. So to me, Kool-Aid McKinstry is probably the best fit. Cooper DeJean is the other one, but there's kind of a caveat with him. I think if you're looking at zone schemes for him as a corner, I think he's a little more natural in cover three, where the middle field is closed and he can play inside saddle more often with his hips to the, with his back to the sideline, right, and his eyes on the QB. Otherwise, you probably want to rotate him in at safety, big nickel. And I think there's a lot of versatility that comes with that. And I'm very excited about, you know, the possibilities if he were to go to the Eagles, his supportability and blitzing ability in that Fangio scheme too. It's really fun to think about him as kind of a chess piece, but I think if you're looking for a corner and just a corner, Kool-Aid McKinstry to me tops the list.
And he was brought in as one of those late guys along with the kid from UCLA, Latu, the edge rusher. Those are both sort of medical things you have to clear up. With Kool-Aid, you have Jones fracture. And those types of things. So those visits, they might be medical visits, and the want to get a quick look and say if everything's okay. And that's one, you know, here in Philadelphia, and people still talk about DK Metcalf, and the Eagles didn't pick DK. They red flagged him. They weren't going to take him because of the medical concerns until day three. And it wasn't about talent. It was about those medical concerns.
Well, on the flip side, they did take Sidney Jones, and that didn't work out. And he was a guy that missed a whole year.
And they took Landon Dickerson, who had serious medical concerns.
So and that worked out. The DK Metcalf one's the one that sticks out the most. But obviously, on the flip side of that, Ian, you know, are there guys that you would say, man, if you took this one at 22, a corner, don't like the fit here?
Don't like the fit. I don't think there's any that I would hate. I think there's a few guys that would maybe be reaches, like, you know, Max Melton is probably a day two guy for me. I have him as early to mid day two. I don't expect him to go round one, but just for purposes of discussion, I think that would be a little early for him. I think at 22, you're looking at Kool-Aid. You're looking at Cooper DeJean, who's probably a corner safety hybrid.
What about Wiggins?
Yeah, I was just going to get to him. You read my mind. But he's one of those guys who's kind of in that 22 to 30 range for me. The only question I have in that Fangio scheme, you know, you got to be able to play support too, right? And his frame is a little bit lighter. Yeah. He doesn't have great proportional length for his size, and that can impact his ability to deconstruct blocks playing downhill, right? So that's the one concern that I have, and that's why I probably prefer Kool-Aid if it's down to those two. But to your point, Nate Wiggins, I think in zone, he does thrive because he's got great route recognition ability. He's got a really tight, smooth, fluid pedal, and he's explosive. He's got the recovery speed to, you know, hawk in front of throws and make big plays, but then also close gaps and support, right? So he does have the urgency. I wonder about the frame and how it translates. I want to pack some mass onto it.
One missed tackle in Philadelphia, and it'll go in a negative fashion. So I'm not excited about that run support aspect for Nate Wiggins. That's why I brought him up. I don't think he's necessarily a fit. I think that's a perfect example. A lot of people have mocked Nate Wiggins to the Eagles, and I'm like, I don't see that fit. I just don't see the fit.
Yeah, I can like I can see why you would consider it, and I think like if you again if you can pack mass onto his frame, like he can get a little bit better. But with his frame, I see him maxing out probably around 185, 190. That's my opinion, right? And you look at the corners that they've generally preferred. They signed James Bradbury, well over 200 pounds, right? Even Darius Slay has a little bit more lean mass on his frame too. So I think the Eagles are probably going to look at guys in that 195, 200 range, and that's where you think about guys like Kool-Aid and Cooper DeJean. I think those are the two that stand out. Max Melton is a little bit leaner too, but the difference with him is that he's got 32 inch arms. So he's got better proportional length, and that shows up in press coverage and in run support where he's actually able to get inside guys' frames. So that's where the fit is a little tricky with Nate Wiggins, but I can't deny if you're willing to bank on the recovery speed and the playmaking ability and the route recognition, all of those tools are there. So there is reason to consider him, but he's not a perfect fit, and we need to acknowledge that.
Offensive tackle would be the other big position people are focused on for two reasons, Ian. It's so deep in this particular draft at the top. So in theory, especially if you have, boy, I don't know where you are, but we always get to this point in the draft process a week out, and there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks. It might even be panics, five in the top 22. Some will try to convince yourself Bo Nix will go in there, and it could be six, which I don't necessarily buy, and we'll see how it shakes out. But the more quarterbacks, the better it is for the Eagles at 22, because that means a good positional player will probably drop even a little bit further than he might if it wasn't a big-time quarterback draft. So from that perspective, there's a lot of tackles. Now, the Eagles don't need a tackle. They have Lane Johnson, who's still playing at an all-pro level. He's got a couple years left on his contract, still playing at a high level, says he wants to continue playing at least for a couple more years. They just gave Jordan Mailata $66 million. They don't need a tackle immediately. What they need is a right guard who can slide out to right tackle. So of that group of the tremendous tackles available, who is the best in your mind that can start short-term, play right guard, and then eventually kick out?
There are a few names that come to mind for me. Troy Fitanu from Washington is the first one for sure. 6'4", 320, 34 and a half inch arms. He's an incredible athlete on the lateral plane with his recovery capacity, but then also in the ground game, you can tell like he's got the power to drive guys. He's very explosive in space and he's a physical guy, but he's got the hand usage as well. So Troy Fitanu, for me, the big thing with him too is he actually has pre-existing guard experience. So it's not a projection like Taliese Fuaga or JC Latham, guys who project well to guard with their traits, but they don't have that experience that Troy Fitanu has. So Fitanu is the dream. That said, I think he's going to go top 20 at this point. His tape is phenomenal. His traits are very good. He's experienced. He's got a really good high floor, high ceiling combination. I could see him going as early as 10 to the New York Jets. I think that's, you know, his ceiling for sure. So it's a little tricky. It depends on who falls to you. But, you know, I mentioned Fuaga and Latham. I think those are the next two guys within that mold. Taliese Fuaga from Oregon State, 6'6", 330. And he's got, I think, around 33 and one-fourth arms. So around average for an offensive tackle. And that's caused some people to consider moving him inside the guard, actually, as a prospect. And, you know, again, in that role, he translates very well. Explosive, tenacious, physical finisher, right? And I think for his size, acquires and maintains leverage and pad level very well through reps. So there's a lot of tools that translate well. But it's just you don't have the pre-existing experience that Fitanu has. And the same thing with Latham. I think Latham is more of a vertical, straight-line mauler, right? But still a very physical, powerful player who fits that blend for you. So you've got guys like Amarius Mims and Tyler Guyton too, but I think they're strictly tackles. I don't think they translate quite as well, guard.
Now, we know Howie likes to move a lot. I mean, very rarely does he just stick in his spot. You mentioned a bunch of corners and offensive linemen, and I guess we could throw edge rushers into this conversation because – Edge, defensive line, tackle, and offensive line is generally where they like to kind of go, although they have taken wide receivers in the past in the few drafts. I don't think that's going to be the case here. But if there is someone, Bill Belichick yesterday was interesting on the McAfee show saying, you know, your turn comes up. You have no idea what's going to happen in front of you. And, you know, Vince Wilfork was at a spot we didn't think he'd be there, and we made a move. And he mentioned multiple times that it happened. So who are a couple of those guys when they get to a certain number falling-wise that Roseman should pick up the phone and act on? Because we know he will if there's a guy that he likes. But who are those couple guys maybe at those positions where, man, that guy's at 15, and so we got to get there?
It's a good question, and I think it's a little tricky, too, because you're at 22, right? So there are certain players like Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, right? If he falls to, say, 16, you got the Seahawks there. One pick later, you got the Jaguars, who are a really good bet to pick him if he's there because they have a big need at corner. He's a scheme fit. So, again, it depends on where they are. I'd say Quinyon Mitchell is a big one because I think he fits the scheme. I think, again, off man zone, he's got very good route intelligence. He can click and close in an instant. He's got that 4.28 speed, right? So he's really a blazer when he's closing, and then he's a elite ball producer as well at the catch point. I think he had 6 interceptions and 45 pass deflections in his career at Toledo. So he's one of the most instinctive playmakers that I've seen with his positioning, with his ability to play through the catch point. And then he's got enough wheeling physicality to play press man too. So I think the scheme fit, I think the upside, if he's there at 16, right, you could consider making a move up, but that's a pretty big move up too. You're going to have to spend a little bit for him, and you might as well wait. So he's a candidate for me. Troy Fitanu is a candidate for me. If he falls to, say, like 17 or 18, I would consider moving up for him because, again, he fits the scheme very well. He can play guard in the immediate timeline and go to tackle. And then eventually, he can be an all-pro player for you. I think he has that kind of potential with his physical ability and his nuance. If I had to pick one more, the edge group is tough. I would pass on the edge group because I think there's a decent chance that one of those top four will be there at 22. So I don't know who is going to be there, but we know Laiatu Latu, the medicals could scare away some teams, right? Chop Robinson is a polarizing prospect. So I think there's a good chance that one of them is available. I think you're looking at a corner or a tackle, or maybe a defensive tackle, because you got Milton Williams as a free agent in 2025. You could improve the depth of that rotation alongside Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter. Let's say you're really high on Byron Murphy the second. There's been some reports that he could be a top 10 pick sleeper, right? So if he falls to a certain point, you want to beef up that rotation, get just absolute game wreckers on the interior. That could be a move you make too. So I think it's all about playing the board. Again, it's different for every guy, but I think that 16 to 18 range, if one of those blue chip players falls, that's a good opportunity.
I'm going to give you a left field like Bill was talking about, because the Eagles don't have a need right now, an immediate need at tight end. Mm-hmm. But, very famous around these parts. Ian, they drafted Dallas Goedert basically when Zach Ertz was Dallas Goedert's current age. So they had a big time tight end and they started that process. Brock Bowers is a kid to me that belongs in the top 10, but we all know teams in this league don't necessarily want to take tight ends that high. And there might be one or two, but if that one or two teams go in a different direction, I think Brock Bowers is one of the best players in this draft, and he might fall a little bit. What do you think his ceiling is? That one team that, all right, if he lasts to this point, there's no way he's going to stay there. How low do you think Brock Bowers could fall?
My floor for him is 15, the Indianapolis Colts. I think that's where it ends for him. I think he's a phenomenal fit for that Shane Steichen offense. And you look at their tight end room, like they have a few decent guys, rotational guys, Kylan Granson, for example. But, more often than not, and they have Jelani Woods, who hasn't really done much, right? They drafted him early in the top 100, and he hasn't really panned out. He's kind of a non-factor right now. So I look at the Colts and what they need at the tight end position, not just what they need at the tight end position, but what they need from a weapon in general, right? You've got Michael Pittman Jr., you've got Josh Downs. You need that vertical stressor who can work up the seam, who can operate as a big slot weapon, right? You can seam touches in the rack phase in the short range. Brock Bowers, to me, is a perfect fit for all of those things. And I think Steichen is one of those mad genius offensive coordinators who would know best how to use him. And then Anthony Richardson has the arm talent to get the most out of him on the vertical plane. And, Brock Bowers also helps scheme easy solutions for him as a young, growing QB. So, to me, that's the floor. I think if Brock Bowers gets to 14, and if you're the Eagles and you're in love with him, I think that's where you got to move up to. Because I think if you let him go to 15, the Colts are going to take him.
Interesting. Would they do that? Take a look.
That's at a little bit high. See, I got to get, but if he starts to drip to 18, they did with Andre Dillard and it didn't work out. They didn't do a lot of homework because they assumed Andre Dillard would be long gone. And all of a sudden he starts falling on draft day and they're like, we should go get this kid. And it didn't work out, but that they've shown the mentality of they will do that type of thinking in the past.
Yeah.
So I throw it out there as a curveball.
Well, but what I think is another interesting storyline, guys, would be, and you brought up defensive tackle, is how much did they value what Fletcher Cox brought, and how much do they think what they currently have can make up for it? Do they trust Jordan Davis enough? What kind of role do they see him having, or do they think they need to get another top flight tackle as part of that rotation because they just don't have enough belief that Jordan Davis can be, have a bigger role? I mean, that to me, if you're sitting there at 22, you're asking yourself, do we really think Jordan Davis is ready to take another step? I think we think Jalen Carter will, but is Jordan Davis essentially, is this what he is? I like Milton Williams too. Do they look at him as a guy that's going to play 50% of the snaps? I mean, an uptick. So the Fletcher Cox retirement, I think, certainly has them making asking questions internally at that spot, no?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know, and again, you guys are more tuned into the Eagles than I am, but, you know, looking at it from the surface, I see.
I mean, I guess based on the talent that might be there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the big thing. You know, you got, there's a good chance, again, that Johnny Newton or Byron Murphy II will be there. Both of those guys are first round players for me. Johnny Newton's actually a top 15 prospect for me. So, you know, I think they're, Johnny Newton, my comp for him.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Jarrell Casey, I think the hyper elite flexibility that he has at that position is a trait that allows him to finish at a level the other DTs just simply can't, right? So I think the explosion, the run game IQ, but also the pass rushing versatility to rush from 3-tech, 4-eye, 5-tech, really exciting with him, Johnny Newton. And then Byron Murphy II, you've got a really sturdy, well-leveraged defender in the run game at 1-tech, 2-eye, but then he's a disruptor at 3-tech with that explosiveness and that torquing capacity with his hands. So I think either one of those guys, right? You know, if you look at your situation, I think the key thing here is that past Jalen Carter, that 3-tech rotation is not very deep. I was a fan of Moro Ajomo as a late round prospect, but I think there's still room for him to keep growing, and he might just be a rotational guy. Yeah, he might max out as that, right? So you're not sure. And then Jordan Davis is more of a nose tackle, right? A 0-tech, a 1-tech, a guy who's going to encumber blocks and hold double teams. So that 3-tech rotation, to me, looks a little susceptible to turnover because Milton Williams, like I said, he's going to be a free agent in 2025 right now as it stands. His contract is set to expire. So they could extend him, but at the same time, if you're not willing to shell out decent money on that, there's a good opportunity to re-up with a really good player in Johnny Newton or Byron Murphy II. And we know Howie Roseman likes the trenches, so it could be a wild card pick that he decides.
Never a surprise if Howie goes inside. 50 or 53, though, Ian, I want to go there, and I need a slot receiver. And I need a coverage linebacker.
Well, hold on. Can I ask this question? If you're going to go to slot receiver at 50 and 53, if there's a receiver at 22 and they take them, the story would be, you know, what's the future for A.J. Brown? But would there be a receiver at that spot that's just you can't pass on?
That you can't pass on. Well, obviously one of the top three guys. So we know
that's Brian Thomas. Brian Thomas.
Yeah, I'd say I think the top one would be Brian Thomas Jr. I wouldn't say that you can't pass on him. I think you can, but it would be very compelling for me to take him there. Because
again, what did that tell a story? Like if they took a receiver at 22?
You're because I think a lot of people are focused on Devontae Smith getting
the contract
$25 million a year, but that doesn't kick in till 2026. And by that time, $25 million a year is going to look pretty good.
True. Just, you know, the whole element of having two receivers Jefferson, making that kind of money, at what point does one say, well, he's making what I'm at, you know?
Well, and then, the problem becomes A.J. Brown, because Jefferson signs, Jamar Chase signs, Brandon Ayuk, C.D. Lamb, and he's going to be well over $30 million by that point. But that's why you take a receiver. But I think it's more likely at 53. So
agree. I'll see if there was somebody at 22 that if he was there and you said, hey, we have this financial burden coming up, let's see if we can replenish the coffers for a little cheaper price, similar to what you do with tight end.
Then I'll kind of expand it to Ian and say, all right, give me somebody who can start in the slot, similar to what we talked about in the offensive line, start as a wide receiver three. And obviously the Eagles receivers are very versatile. AJ moves inside, Devontae can move. They can all play at X, Z, and flex anyway, but somebody's going to be in the slot the majority of the time and then maybe can kick outside. Like I remember the Jefferson draft, and people are saying, well, because he played in the slot LSU. And you know this, Ian. Why didn't anybody go back to the year before when he was great outside? Mm-hmm. And he turned into what he turned into. I'm not saying you're going to get a Justin Jefferson, but at 50 to 53, is there a player that projects maybe inside early and then can do a little bit more as you get him involved?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, and real quick, Brian Thomas Jr., I think he would be a very exciting fit, right? Would I would do it? I'm not sure, but I think his ability to win on slot fades and also expand to the boundary would be a rack threat. It would be very exciting for sure. But to 50 and 53, I think there are options available to you. The ones that stand out to me, Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson, Jalen Polk from Washington is one of my favorite ones. I think he'd be a phenomenal fit. I think he kind of fits the Puka profile with the way that he wins, being 6'1", 203, 32-inch arms, but he's very alignment versatile. So again, to your point, versatility, a big thing. He can take reps on the boundary, in the slot, movement Z, right? He can take reps off motions and jet sweeps, right? But he can do crossers, mesh routes, you know, deep crossers as well, slant routes. There's a lot to his game that suggests versatility. And then also at the catch point, he's one of the best converters in this class with his body control, his hand-eye coordination, and he's a pretty fluid rack threat too. So Jalen Polk from Washington would be my guy, and the other Washington guy as well, Jalen McMillan, right? I mean, your example, you know, Justin Jefferson, his final year was a little bit more in the slot, but the year before showed more boundary reps. That's kind of something that you see in Jalen McMillan too. You know, he wasn't always on the field because of injuries this past year, but going back earlier in his career, you saw more boundary reps, and he has the route running chops to win there. He has the vertical speed, and being around 6'1", a little bit leaner, but he's got good length too, a good wingspan, catch radius. So I think those few guys really stand out to me. Pearsall is a phenomenal route runner, but also pretty workmanlike in the blocking game too. So if you need him to block an open space, he can do that. Roman Wilson, same with him. There are other guys that do have slot potential, like Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky, but I don't think he has the boundary utility, the versatility the other guys have. So I think you'd be confined to those route runners who can win as separators, but also provide that versatility and three-level framework.
Yeah, good. You know, I like both Washington guys as well. You know, Polk is a guy at 50, 53 would be very interesting to give them. You know, what they've had in that slot has been not very good, very inconsistent, as we know. And it would just be another weapon. But as John pointed out earlier, Ian, Brock Bowers might be a guy you would trade up for. But if you need a tight end, or if they're looking at a tight end, what does that 50-53 look at? Because John's right. They have taken Zach Ertz in the second round and Dallas Goedert in the second round. So it feels like a year where that would be a spot that they would look at tight end.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's one guy on my board that stands out. You've got other guys like Jared Wiley, Jatavion Sanders, Theo Johnson, Cade Stover, but they're more fringe day two, day three players for me. I think the one player that if I'm the Eagles, if I really want a tight end with one of those two picks, the one player that I would hone in on is Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. He's my tight end too. He's a top 50 player for me. 6'4", 250 pounds, really fluid route runner for his size. I mean, his bend and fluidity on inbreakers and digs is really impressive to me, but he's got a full route tree. He can run, you know, stop and goes, you know, in and outs up the seam as well. He's got strong hands over the middle of the field. He's a very physical rack threat with that leg churn, right? And then he's a versatile blocker too. You know, I think Dallas Goedert's more of your big inline seam guy, but Ben Sinnott can play H-back. He can play out wide. A lot of versatility that comes with him outside on those 1-2 personnel looks. And then at the same time too, you know, I think that usage versatility lends itself well as a receiving threat and a target funnel on late downs and clutch downs too. So Ben Sinnott to me has the best three-level framework. He's got some Dallas Clark to him, I think, with the way that he moves, the explosion, the agility, the fluidity, the really crisp direction changes, and then having the play strength that comes with his frame too. And then he's a workmanlike player. You know, all the reviews of his character are very good. So I think you're looking at a guy with that versatility and that day one integration freedom to really elevate your offense.
At IC underscore draft, Ian Cummings, you know, you're a first round pick from my perspective.
I appreciate
you do
it.
A tremendous job. Linebacker, I sort of alluded to before, that's the weakest spot on the Eagles. I mean, they need to add a body, and they're not going to pick one at 22, nor does one deserve to be picked there. Edgerrin Cooper's the guy, but I think they're in no man's land. I don't think there's any way he lasts to 50. If I said that coverage linebacker, 50, 53, again, that's the area we're talking about. Who's your guy?
Yeah, there's a few guys. I think Edgerrin Cooper, there's a chance that he's there. Mm-hmm. I think it's because he's
perfect.
He's explosive for sure. I think his coverage can get a little more improvement out of his hip leverage maintenance at the second level, getting depth. But I think, again, explosive coming downhill, his range and pursuit, and then his block deconstruction and angle IQ is truly top notch. So I'd be that would be a phenomenal pick. But a few guys that I look at, Peyton Wilson is a big wild card because of his medicals, right? He's got multiple season-ending injuries in his history, and his frame being 6'4", but under 240 pounds, he's really lean, really narrow, and you wonder about his durability. So if you're thinking about coverage and range and support, right, and tackling ability, he's one of the best guys. He's my top overall graded linebacker, not accounting for medicals, right? But the medicals are such a landmine for him. I think it's really difficult to pinpoint his value, so he may drop. The two guys that stand out to me with more security, Junior Colson from Michigan, and then Trevin Wallace from Kentucky. I think those two guys. And then you've got Cedric Gray from North Carolina, who I think is a good sleeper in round three. But Trevin Wallace and Junior Colson, to me, have a really exciting blend of upside and immediate utility as coverage linebackers. Junior Colson is one of the better coverage linebackers that I've seen in my time. I think his sample size, you look at his hip leverage IQ, again, he gets depth very well, but he can also manage spacing with overlapping routes. And then he's got a really good trigger on inbreakers as well. He's physical at the catch point, and he's a tough guy. He was playing the better part of the year with two clubs on his hands. And there's actually an interview where he says, like, hey, I wasn't coming off the field unless I couldn't move, right? So you want that toughness at the linebacker spot. You want that over the middle of the field. I think at times in the box, he can be a little too hesitant processing gaps. That's where he stands to improve. With Wallace, it's kind of the opposite. Sometimes he'll be a little too aggressive and flush through gaps and open up lanes for runners on the cutback. So both of them have things to work on in the box and run defense. But Trevin Wallace too, man, 6'1", 240 almost, 33-inch arms. So really good disruptive radius and coverage. And then he's shown that he can mirror and match running backs on wheel routes. And he's got the vertical speed to just dwarf them over the sideline. And then he's got some pretty good mirroring ability in the middle of the field too. So Trevin Wallace, Junior Colson, those are the names that stand out to me. If I had to bet, I'd say the Eagles probably take one of them with one of those two picks. But again, it all depends on the valuation and, you know, other factors.
Well, we've gone just about at every level. We had a conversation about a week ago that basically was saying there is a reason that the Eagles could use a player at 22 at every spot on the field. I mean, they have somebody there, but they can improve. And there's, like, you know, they have Bradbury and Slay, but you could get younger. You've got this offensive line that's pretty good, but you need a right guard that could possibly move out. You have two good receivers, but your third spot's been weak. Your tight end is getting to an age where you need another one. Almost every spot has somebody, but is there a safety at 22 that you would say, that guy is the pick? He's the fit right next to Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. He's sitting right there for you because safety's a spot this team generally does not look at.
We've already talked about him, but Cooper DeJean, I think, would be the guy. I think it's tough because it is a projection because he played corner pretty much most, you know, primarily at Iowa, right? So it's a big projection. But the whole evaluation with Cooper DeJean is that his traits translate so well at safety. You know, it's playing with his eyes to the quarterback. It's the route recognition, the trigger quickness, right? You know, the ability to stay fluid on his pedal and use kick slides to manage leverage as well. His ability to play and manage space is truly phenomenal. And then he's a gliding athlete. He's got that range and speed. We saw that at his pro day verified, but you can see it on the tape, when he clicks and closes, when he reacts, he closes ground in an instant. He can make plays on the ball. He's physical at the catch point. He's like a de facto linebacker in support too. His playing weight will be closer to 210 pounds. And he's a rocked up dude. Like, he can play, he can deconstruct blocks, he can hold the line, and he can make tackles at the line of scrimmage too. So I think his ability to just be that Swiss Army safety where he can play too high, probably not a single high guy. Maybe I do think he has the range though. I think he has the playmaking ability, the vision as well. So, you know, I'm not averse to trying him there, but especially too high in the box, right? And then you can play him on the boundary and cover three zone looks, right? I think he has that utility to stay at corner in some schematic looks, but his versatility, his projected versatility that comes from his high level physical and foundational framework, to me, it's a phenomenal fit at safety. But then in Vic Fangio's scheme, where Fangio can let loose and have him attack on some plays, that's even more exciting. So Cooper DeJean, I know it's a projection, but 22 overall, if you picked him there and decided to try him out at safety, you'd have no complaints from me.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's, by the way, I came into this conversation wanting to take Cooper DeJean, and you have now sold me that I'm not changing my mind.
That's what I'm here for.
1 week away from the NFL draft, and Cummings Pro Football Network. Here on Birds 365, we told you at the beginning of the conversation, he knew who they were going to take at 22. He read my mind. We both feel the same guy. Cooper DeJean is the pick. We'll talk about it next week. All right, Ian. Good stuff, man. We learned a lot, and hopefully the viewers got a lot of information now that they can all act like they've watched every single college game this year and figure out who they like.
Yep, that's what it's all about. I appreciate you guys having me on. One more week.
Yeah, thanks, man. Ian. Appreciate it, bud.
That's the thing, John. Now, I watch a good amount of college football because I went to a school that has, you know, Big 12. I watch a lot of Big 12. Ben Sennett, Kansas State, big dude, man. So when he mentions guys like that, you know, those are guys I've watched and seen. But I love this time of the year where everybody knows prospects that they've never seen.
You know, it's funny because I always like, you're so bogged down when you cover an NFL team. I watch very little college football during the season. So I'm like the coaches. I come in last minute.
Yeah.
And I lean in on people like Ian. Ian's one of the guys I trust.
I agree. And one thing, though, I will say about Cooper DeJean, because their defense was so good this year, a lot of people bet the unders on them all the time. So you're watching their games a lot because you're betting the unders, and you would just see this guy flying all over, so much so that he broke his damn leg, you know, because he's just flying all over the place. By the way, he's also an excellent punt returner. I think he was second in the Big Ten.
Well, the Eagles don't need a punt returner. They might need a kickoff returner because it's more relevant, but Britton Covey's pretty good
as
a punt returner. And we'll see how that shakes out, of how much more kickoffs are relevant this year.
I think that's going to be a big factor.
Yeah. And that might mean something on day three, a little bit more this year than in prior years. When you try to find somebody with legitimate turn experience and ability, that might factor in. But I think more in day three. With Cooper DeJean, I think the versatility hurts. I really do. From the perspective, not from him, I think it's great for his, but for the Eagles finding a fit. Like, I don't think they're looking for a safety in round one, as Ian kind of made the projection. I don't know if that's the way you feel. If he can play outside corner, they might take him, but they take him to be a corner.
Well, is this a situation similar to what you have with what you've had over the years? You know, you draft Cam Jurgens because he's a center, you play him at right guard. You draft Cooper DeJean because
because
you have Bradbury.
It's a little more frequent on the offensive line, because backup offensive linemen in the NFL need to have versatility. You can only dress eight. Most teams dress eight. You have an interior backup, you have a swing tackle. Some teams only dress seven because of that reason. Last year, the Eagles kind of piecemealed it with Jack Driscoll and Fred Johnson, but as far as not having a legitimate swing tackle. But you're always doing that with the offensive line. You're not doing that a lot in the secondary. Some guys can. The last guy the Eagles had, Malcolm Jenkins, was the one who played all over the place, and he embraced that and took it as a challenge. There's not a lot of guys who do that. Brian Flores, I bring up Josh Metellus all the time, played every position on the field. He played 13 positions last year, Mike. They made up a position for him, a couple of positions, and not a lot. You know, he's not playing defensive line for 100 snaps, but occasionally you throw that curveball in there. Yeah. There aren't a lot of players like that. In Vic Fangio's scheme, Vic's been around for a long time. You can look at his scheme. There aren't a lot of guys who move from corner and safety in the game. In other words, there might be a guy who plays corner and somebody gets hurt at safety and you have to move them to safety. And the Eagles have done that in the past with Avante Maddox and vice versa with C.J. Gardner-Johnson moving to the slot and back and forth. But Jonathan Gannon always called the slot and safety mirrored positions in this defense. So you might see that. But when it comes to outside corner, when it comes to somebody playing single high, cover three, as Ian said, all these different zone coverages Vic throws out there, and more it's going to be quarters, cover six, cover eight, then cover three. There's guys, there's corners, and there's safeties. So I don't see the need for that. If they're going to take, and I'm not saying they can't take Cooper DeJean. If they take him, though, they're going to take him to be a cornerback. That's my opinion.
Yeah, he played like a Leo position. They kind of created a position for him at Iowa too, where he was.
Yeah, I don't see that happening here. I just there's no evidence that he's done that in the past.
All right, so there you go. A lot of draft conversation 1 week from the draft, and obviously more nuggets will be coming along between now and Thursday when the Eagles make their pick, and of course. We'll have more discussion on it. Birds 365. Brooks Kubina will be joining us in the 9 o'clock hour. Jalen Hurts yesterday had some interesting things to say. We'll talk about that and more coming up here on Birds 365.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now. Save big.